Bruce Jenkins joins us. Time now to look through the window of baseball with our good friend Bruce Jenkins, one of the top sports writers, I think, and a great baseball writer as well. Bruce, I don't say it enough about you. But it's brought to us by Marvin Windows, of course, and Doors.
Yep.
And Truett and White, the professional builder's choice with their new showroom in Monterey. Bruce, good morning. How are you, Bruce?
Morning, guys. How you doing?
Well, pretty good. It's pretty active out here today for a club that's lost 5 out of 6. People are still laughing out here. How does this happen?
Yeah, it's been pretty strange. I think the first thing you look at is 43-26, which is their record. The 6.5-game lead is getting a little bit scary now. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the last two games were complete nightmares. It's so funny. Yesterday you said that you thought the Rockies were getting in Romo's head. And I don't know what's in there, but when he looks in there, he doesn't see a lot of great things happen against the Rockies. I mean, it's not like he's been shelled, but, my God, these last two games have just been bizarre. And, you know, good for Romo for, you know, standing up post-game and you know, keeping his head up and realizing it's a good club. And it's not like he's lost his stuff. And I don't think it's any cause for massive concern, but, you know, it's two very disturbing games and endings to games.
Yeah, and, you know, Kruka, I thought, did a good job of analyzing it yesterday. He said, you know, in some ways he's a one-pitch pitcher. And if that slider is not sliding where he wants it, you know, consistently, then it gets over the plate and people get a good whack at it. And he really is not a guy who uses the fastball that much to the lefties. He's that changeup that dives away.
Yeah.
And I think he's got to change a little. You know, it's the old story of adjusting in baseball. Mm-hmm. And it's a long way to go. And he's 20 out of 24. And I realize the Rockies are the one team to get to him and the other teams really haven't. But over the success of a season, you have to adjust. And I think he's got to do that.
Well, I'm not sure I agree with that, only for this reason. If you look at all the balls that were hit in both of those games against him, you know, you don't see anybody just coming out of their shoes and hitting a Deadpool rocket or just really crushing the ball like they know what's coming. I mean, you know, Blackman, beautiful off-field hit. The ball that got by Pagan had a little slice on it. It's not like he's getting hammered. I think he's got too much history of being able to get away with his repertoire for many, many years. And to me, it doesn't seem like people have all of a sudden solved him. If he were just getting undressed out there, they might think about, well, this guy just doesn't have it. We can maybe go to Machi or whatever. But I'm just not seeing him getting shelled. I'm seeing a bunch of bizarre circumstances that I think he can correct. He of course, you're right, he does need to really refine that change up to lefty hitters and use the fastball at the right times. The fastball has been a good surprise pitch for him over the years in some pretty big situations. So it's a little tricky. He's a different kind of guy.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's lost his stuff, and I don't think he's suddenly at a crossroads where it's do or die.
All right. Well, he's got to be more consistent, in my mind. If he throws 10 pitches instead of 5 being good, 8 have to be good.
Yeah.
And I think he's got to get a strikeout when he needs it, and he hasn't been able to get those strikeouts, at least against the Rockies.
Yeah.
So that's the difference for me. He's got to get that strikeout, as a reliever's got to do.
Yeah.
But, Bruce, what a year for relief pitching. Every time you pick up the paper, another reliever is blowing a save or giving up runs and all that kind of stuff. So it's the nature of the beast. But, boy, you know, you got two or three that are just automatic, and the rest of them give up runs.
Yeah.
Yeah, watching highlights from the other games, it's been amazing to watch Joe Nathan, you know, have terrible losses. And Grant Balfour, just, you know, disastrous stuff in Tampa Bay. These guys have lost their jobs outright. Teams are struggling. You know, the Angels guy, Frieri, one week he's unbelievable. The next week you just get him out of there. And it's very unusual to get a guy who just is automatic. And even, you know, Johnson for the A's. I mean, it's just everywhere you look, somebody who was supposed to be able to be your stopper, you know, just isn't.
Yeah, and Houston Street is maybe the best at baseball right now.
Or Craig Kimbrell, and he gave up a run yesterday.
Believe it or not, yeah. Frankie Rodriguez, Houston Street, or Kimbrell may be the best in baseball.
That's right.
Yeah, Uehara is right there. I mean, he's had a couple of hiccups, so yeah, it's such a gamble. I mean, you know, the way Billy Bean handles it is so smart. I think he never assumes that his guy is going to be that forever. He'll usually jump the gun and get in there before the guy takes a dive. Right now, he's looking at a bit of a crisis there, although Doolittle's been great. It's flighty stuff.
Yeah, I think the Giants are heading that way. Not that they're going to move him or do anything crazy, But they're not going to get too involved with spending $20 million to bring him back as a closer, I'll tell you that.
No, I would agree with that.
Yeah. Hey, it is Father's Day, Bruce, and it's always wonderful to hear stories of you grew up in Los Angeles. Now, your father, of course, was an icon of the music business. Was he a baseball fan as well?
Oh, yeah. Well, he grew up in St. Louis. He was born in 1910. So you're talking about 1920 to 1930. You know, he's 10 to 20 years old. He moved out of St. Louis to New York and never looked back when he was about 20 years old. But he was a St. Louis Browns fan.
Sure, they were good then.
Yeah, well, they did get to be good, but in the 20s they were terrible. They had guys like, you know, Barney Pelty and Bunny Brief and Farmer Ray. These guys are actual people. And George Sisler showed up.
That
changed everything. This is a guy who hit 400 twice.
Wow.
And my dad had a brother and two sisters who were big Cardinals fans, and he always liked to be a little different in life. But, you know, in 1926, the Cardinals won the World Series, Grover Cleveland, Alexander, Rogers, Hornsby. And remember my dad always telling me about a pitcher named Wee Willie Schirdell. he loved Wee Willie Schirdell. So, and then he moved to L.A. and spent a lot of time in New York, really, he became a Dodger fan. And was in New York for a lot of that great era where you had, you know, Mickey Mantle, Willie Mays, and Duke Snyder. And I saw a lot of games at Ebbets Field. And when I came along in 58, he started taking me to Dodger games at the Coliseum. And so it was pretty much, you know, all Dodgers for him and for me. And he took me to a lot of games. We lived a great deal a long way from the park. In those days, the freeway system wasn't all that great. But he made it happen, and, you know, the L.A. Coliseum, as laughable as it was looked like a real paradise to me.
Boy, amazing. And that's where you get the love for baseball. Isn't it incredible?
Right. Oh, without a doubt. I don't think he was too impressed with the Pacific Coast League after spending so much time in New York watching, you know, Mantle and the DiMaggio and all of those great teams. I never did go to the Hollywood Stars or the L.A. Angels, but I'm 10 years old when the Dodgers move west, and that's usually when a kid really starts to plug in. So
wow. Yeah, beautiful. Yeah. Bruce Jenkins with us. Bruce, Ron Wotus and I talked a little bit this morning about great throws in baseball and the great arms. I don't know if we touched on this very much yesterday, but he brought up a couple of players. One was Vladimir Guerrero and Larry Walker. And I kind of forgot about Guerrero was so strong.
Yeah.
And then he brought up Shinjo. He said Shinjo made a throw from right center field at warning track and threw somebody out at the plate. These guys couldn't believe it.
I remember that. Yeah, that was Shinjo is one of these guys. He seemed like a real talent coming out of Japan, kind of a rock star idol kind of guy. And turned out he really couldn't hit major league pitching at all. But he did some pretty great things in the field, enabled him to stick around a few more, you know, months, really, not so many years. But, I did a piece the other day in the wake of the Cespedes thing trying to recall some of the great arms, you know, Vladimir Guerrero and Barfield and Dave Parker. A couple readers brought up Carl Farrillo and Rocky Colavito, which is great. You know, the right field position is really where the great throws happen. And what made Cespedes' throw so unusual was that it came out of the left field corner, which you hardly ever see a throw from there. But the greatest throws, the longest, straightest and string throws have generally come from right field.
Yeah, you know, Wotus happened to say about the Cespedes' throw, Pat, that it had a lot of air under it.
That's right, yeah. And with the great ones, not to put down Cespedes in any way, the guy's an unbelievable athlete. But you know, when you think about guys like the Parker's throwing the All-Star game, or Clemente from the corner throwing out a guy at third, they're just the frozen ropes, you know, all the way to the point of destination. And Hunter Pence will uncork a few like that too.
Yeah, absolutely. Bruce Jenkins here from the Chronicle, Weekends in the Park from the Public House, and he also mentioned Raul Mondesi, who I remember had one of the first tattoos I ever saw in baseball. He had a tattoo of a cannon on his right, his throwing deltoid. It was amazing. But I was watching the sports reporters this morning, because I love to get up on a Sunday morning and watch the sports reporters. You mentioned Shinjo. This caught me off guard, and Bob Ryan had this stat that Tanaka, the great Yankee pitcher, who's 10-1, this guy has 92 and two-thirds innings pitched this season. Not once has he been in a 3-0 count.
Wow. Oh, my God.
That caught me off guard.
Yeah, this is a guy. His splitter is an absolute gift, and every time he throws it, it's down low. Pretty much everything he throws is down low, except he'll try to sneak a fastball by, you know, around shoulder high and catch you off guard. But that's an amazing stat. That really is. That guy, that guy came in with an awful lot of hype, and he's been even more than they thought. I think they saw him as like a second or third guy in the rotation, but he's absolutely ace material.
Yeah, maybe the best pitcher in baseball. I mean, I know Tim Hudson, there's an argument for him right now, but 2.02 ERA and a whip under one, so pretty good stuff from Tanaka.
Especially the American League.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, definitely one of the best splitters ever, I think, I've ever seen.
Wow.
Well, I'll give you another outfield arm, Bruce. How about Ollie Downtown Brown?
Yeah, good one. San Diego Padres, yeah, absolutely.
He played for the Giants.
Yep.
When I grew up, that was one of the names that people would talk about, Ollie Downtown Brown. You got to ask some of the old Giants about him, and I guess Peter McGowan probably remembers.
He hit him downtown, and he could throw you out from downtown.
That's right. He had a great arm in the outfit, and you're right. He became a San Diego Padre, one of the original ones. Boy, looking at so many things happened this week, and we talked yesterday about Bob Welch, and Bruce, there's a part of baseball that the baseball community knows how to memorialize throws, players, moments. Isn't it wonderful? It's just something about baseball that brings everybody back, that time is frozen when we have to do it.
It's really true, and it's more true in baseball than any other sport. I mean, you know, so many, you can go to an NBA game, and it takes something really... It's totally extraordinary to get kind of frozen in time. I can think of a couple of Michael Jordan plays, you know, Magic Johnson, sort of live forever, but it's not like baseball. And I think part of it is because, you know, baseball is such a slow-moving, relaxing game, and it's almost backdrop sometimes. You know, if you're at home listening on the radio, it's just a very pleasant pastoral experience. And when something really amazing happens, it really stays in the mind. And you know, now that we have such sophisticated technology, everything's on video. The MLB Network can call up this or that, and you know, in the case of Welch, you know, you can call up that at bat and watch it again, and don't fast forward it. You know, live it in real time. I think it was 7 minutes worth. You know, I agree. The baseball moments definitely stand out a little more, I think, in the mind. Yeah, the baseball moments.
And the community knows how to celebrate it and knows how to do it. That's the thing. We all want it, and we know how to do it.
Exactly. And you get moments frozen in your head that identify a player. And if you're at a bar 20 years later and somebody's name comes up, they go, "Do you remember when he hit that ball, into the upper deck, or made that throw or that slide or whatever?" It's just a great thing. You get these moments of that identify a player for life in your mind.
Yeah, Bruce. And speaking of the baseball community, I've been itching to talk to you about this since yesterday in your Three Dot Lounge. There's a culture war going in within that baseball community: new school versus old school, sabermetricians versus us, I suppose. And you had a phenomenal quote from Matt Cain, and one line real quick is. He said, "You can't let a computer crunch a bunch of numbers to determine a player's worth to a team." Are both sides, including us as the old school, are we being stubborn about this, or should we acknowledge there is room for VORP and BABIP? And then there's also room for acknowledging the human side of baseball.
Well, I definitely think there's room for both. I don't think either side should be particularly outraged at the other, because baseball is a game that can be analyzed a million ways. It can be analyzed really without even having to watch a game. I would never recommend it, but there are people who take apart things without even, you know, having the visuals. They just look at the numbers. But I see it from both sides, because when I went to Cal, I was very much into stats. I did all the stats for the baseball team. I traveled with them, and I wrote the game stories for the Daily Cal, but I also did the stats. And I was actually enlisted to put together the Pac-8 statistical record book. It didn't exist, so I spent like a month at the Pac-8 office on my spare time at Cal putting together this record book, and I'm just totally into it, stats. So now it's the mid-70s, and I'm starting to cover baseball for the Chronicle. And I'm traveling back east, and I'm hanging around guys like Gene Mauch and Earl Weaver and Bobby Cox and Dick Williams and later Frank Robinson and Tony La Russa, and this is the language of baseball now that I'm starting to listen to. And I realize how much I plugged into that and how much I treasure that. What really, the only thing that really bothers me about the really ardent analytics guys is that the old timers, well, they don't really know what they're talking about, and that just fries my ass, if you don't mind my language. I mean, you imagine these guys walking into a room with Ron Wotus or Willie Mays and starting to lay all this garbage on them while they're trying to explain the game the way they see it. I mean, It's put me completely on the other side. I'm all about watching the game and trusting your eyes. I still love stats, but I love the visuals, the personalities, the way people react to situations, all of those things. I value that so much more, and that's just how I enjoy the game. It doesn't make me, or you know, any of us old school guys, you know, the ultimate answer by any means. But that's just how I enjoy the game. I don't want to hear the other language. And they don't want to hear the way we looked at it in the past. So there's no reason for warfare. That's the beauty of the game, is that it can be looked at from so many different ways.
Well, okay. Today's a great, but you said it beautifully. Today's a great example of it, because they're throwing a guy today. He's got to get a win. He's got to be a stopper. I don't care what his numbers are.
Right.
You put the ball in his hand, and in his mind, he says, I got to go out and be a stopper today. And that's the key to the game today.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know what his numbers are. You go, Bumgarner's going to say, I go, good. He'll be the guy to turn this around, because that's just the kind of person he is.
Boy, beautiful.
Kind of pitcher he is.
Beautiful. Hey, Bruce, thank you so much. Have a happy Father's Day. What's on the agenda for you today?
Yeah.
Well, my daughter's off at camp, so it's pretty much my wife and I. My big girls are out of town as well. Fortunately, Martha's the biggest sports fan as I am, and it's an amazing day with the World Cup and the golf and Giants and A's, and she's got something special planned. I don't know quite what it is, but I think we're going to be around the house and enjoying all the great stuff that's going down today.
Cool. Oh, beautiful. Cool. Bruce, thanks so much. Enjoy the day, and always a pleasure.
Right on, Bruce.
Thanks, guys.
All right, that is a great Bruce Jenkins. Boy, is he the best?
Yeah, he nailed that.